Huh?
We're live.
Oh, we're live.
Let's go. Oh, let's do. Okay, cool.
Are we live? Are we really live?
We're doing it now. Everything.
Oh, snap!
Everything's happening.
I love it.
Okay.
Look at Jeff getting on it.
That's the producer.
I like it. All right, so we're live. It's the Most High Show. We're streaming. Okay.
Let me see.
I don't see us on Facebook yet.
I'm waiting.
We're waiting to see it. You see it streaming? Recording too?
I usually get a notification.
Oh, here it goes. Nice. I like that. You caught that candid moment, Jeff. All right. Well, this is it. This is the Most High Show. My name is Christian, and with me today is Mike Govani and David Cleopi.
Yo.
And Jeff Anonymous. And we are in the building. We're going to be talking about trauma therapy, psychedelics.
Whoa.
Mike's coming with some heat, and I'm really excited to talk to Mike.
Dude, I'm down.
Because he's coming from an angle that we don't always get to talk about on the show. And so I'm really grateful to have this conversation with him. And then Dave is going to bring us the mystic moment.
Whatever that is.
Whatever that is. We'll find out. All that's happening next on The Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the compliments I get from the show, people say, I've heard this a couple times, a few more than a couple times, is that people say, what I really like is how real your show is. Like, there's always an instance where it's like, oh, we'll cut that out.
Oh, yeah,
you know, and they can hear us say, we're going to cut that out. And we never cut it out.
And I hope it stays on.
Yeah. So, my man, David Ja Cleopi.
Yes, yes.
Is here with a mystic moment. I want to see what you bring into the table today.
All right. So I've been thinking about this off and on all day, right? And I haven't come up with anything, but... because it's really not my place to be the mystical guy. That's you, dude, right? But I'm going to give you some words.
Okay.
And my plan is for you to bring the mystique to these words.
Okay.
Right? Three words, all right? And I can definitely give some feedback off of it, too. It is balance, anxiety, and change. Give me something with that.
Are they correlated together?
Yes. Work them together.
How do all those words work together?
Yeah. Apply it. Like, think
of
those.
This feels like a mental exercise, like a mental calisthenic.
It is, but you have to be mystic.
Balance, anxiety.
Change.
Okay. So change makes you anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Balance is important.
Yeah.
I don't talk about signs a lot, but my sign is a Libra.
Mm.
You know? So the scales.
Yeah.
Balance.
Yeah.
I like to have the right amount of function and dysfunction.
Mm.
Enough sacred and profane. I like the two of those, right?
Yeah.
We talked earlier. I did an Enneagram. I'm an Enneagram 4. The Enneagram 4 is really good at holding the sacred and the profane together, right? So to me, balance is those things.
Yeah.
I'm not sure because I think, like, not everybody is balanced, you know?
Yeah.
So we have mutual friends that are not balanced. And that's the way that they are designed.
They function that way.
Man, and I love them for it.
Yeah.
And they're powerful humans.
It's admirable to see them move the way they move.
Yeah.
In that unbalanced state.
Man.
Every day. Right?
Yeah. Because they go.
Yeah.
For me, I need the balance. When I'm unbalanced, I become anxious. I think anxiety is a natural response for most humans to change.
Mm-hmm.
Because most humans are attached to their current situation,
right?
Or they're attached to what they think their current situation
is.
Yeah.
All up in here with it.
All in there with it. What? Yeah. What was your?
Well, the reason I asked that is because, like, right now, I always feel like in recovery, you're almost challenged to keep changing or keep moving or keep, like, almost. Striving might not be the word, but, you know, to constantly move, keep changing, don't be stagnant, right? And I was thinking about that because, honestly, like, right now in my life, I'm good. Like, I'm probably better than I've ever been in a long, long time. I can't think of being in a better place than I am right now. And I think the reason of that is I have, like, prayed for balance in my life. I've been praying, like, for balance. I want, like, my work life to mean as much as my personal life, and I want my personal life to mean as much as to me as my spiritual life. I want my spiritual life to mean as much to me as my material. Like, I want real balance in my life, and I think God right now has that prayer has been answered in the way I'm living today.
Yeah,
you know. If there's any anxiety, it's just like, oh man, am I being stagnant? What more can I do? And just the thought of that brings anxiety because I'm really digging where I'm at right now. My reality is good. You know, I'm not saying it's like, you know, rainbows. I mean, I had the most intense conversation with my wife today. I mean, it was intense, man. But, like, I think another thing that's really helping me in those moments is that I'm in that reality. Like, I'm not getting stuck with, like, what did she mean by that? You know, I'm not in my head. I'm, like, taking what she gave me. Exactly what she said. And I try my best to meet her there. And if I'm not meeting, like, her expectations, I'm making an effort to, like, do more, like, at that moment. But the thing that stuck with me in that, now, the difference between me and before and me now is that I'm really digging that she told me she loved me very much. That meant a lot to me. You know what I'm saying? And it was before this intense conversation even took place.
Balance.
Yeah. And it did. It balanced that whole thing out. You know what I mean? Because when it got really heated, I was thinking, man, she told me she really loved me for real. And I know she meant that. You know what I mean? So it was just like something that I was thinking about today of like, I always in recovery, living the recovery life, I feel like, you know, the challenge is to be able to adjust to your changes.
Yeah. You know,
and I'm not really right now in this, like, I'm not really in the mood to necessarily strive. Like, I'm good. I'm good right now.
Right.
And I'm cool with that.
But there's also a piece of you that's kind of like, is that okay?
Yeah. There's like, there's an uncomfortable aspect to it because it's like, I'm supposed to be, what's next? What's the next move? Who can I serve more? Can I do more? You can always do more.
Well,
you can be different. You can do, you know, all that.
Yeah. So I did a podcast on the Mystic Journey podcast called Keep Digging or Faceplant the Dirt. Because on some level, we have to continue to grow. Now, your life has become manageable. And my life has become manageable in a lot of aspects, right? There's still the unmanageability of my head. My head is very much unmanageable. Mm. But I still dig. And if I keep ahead of the curve and keep growing, that's why I gave you the book I gave you before we started recording. I try to read new books. I got a book from a guy who talks about, he was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he talked about how there's kind of a moment in human history where religion and spirituality enters, and he attributes that to, this kind of goes with what Mike might be talking about, he attributes that to maybe psychedelics entering to, and the spiritual use of psychedelics to see and commune with the spirits.
Joe Rogan's all about that too. Shout out to Joe Rogan.
Yeah, so he, in this book, he's talking about, and so he's like a doctor, he's like a professor, and he goes and he's doing these hallucinogens. He's
chomping on psilocybin all crazy.
Well, I can't remember which one he did the first in the opening of the chapter, but I'm always reading, I'm always digging, I'm always growing, because my experience is when I stop those internal practices, I think that's the thing. When you stop the internal practice, that's when I think whatever God is gets your attention through the material world.
Man, that's deep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, because that's a whole different that's I'm not going to take up no more time, but that's a whole different like perspective, dude. I love you for always giving me like a different perspective of things, because when I thought about change, it was like striving outwardly, like, you know, looking for more money,
yeah,
getting higher credentials, striving that way. And like, you're totally talking about an internal growth in you,
yeah,
you know, and that's something that I think that should be a constant growth or a constant surge, you know what I mean?
Oh, so, yeah. The moment you think you figured it out,
yeah,
that's the moment you're far.
I got it. I got it, guys. It's good. I'm great.
Hey, you know what's the what's an addict's favorite two words?
What's that?
I know.
Thank you guys, man. That was my mystic moment time.
You going to hang out?
Yeah, I'm hanging out.
Because the doors are locked. So
definitely. I ain't going anywhere. I'm in.
All right. So that was the mystic moment brought to you by David Ja, Cleope, courtesy of Cleope Enterprises. We're going to take a break. You're going to see some or listen to some Most High Media content, documentaries, some stuff that we got going on. And then we're going to come back with Mike. We're going to be talking about he's an integrative practitioner. We're going to talk about not bypassing the mind-body connection. We're going to talk about non-12 steps path to recovery, psychedelics, trauma therapy. He's got a lot, and we're going to see how much we dig into. I'm really looking forward to it. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
We need Led Zeppelin in the background
at this point. Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers. Other people do. And learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who've been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living, but it's actually real and obtainable, that's why.
We packed up to tell the story of a young lady who lost her daughter.
So there's a extremely high correlation between suicide, mental illness, and substance abuse.
I'm on the ground. I'm on the ground. Sir.
I think as of this year, there's about 14 million people in America who have a co-occurring disorder, and a little more than 7% of them seek help for it.
You know, in my addiction, I felt like I was better off dead.
I'm here to talk about my daughter, Megan, who committed suicide when she was 28.
There's enough hope in the people that do recover to where I keep going and keep showing up at places where I'm needed.
If you need some things like love and change, I'm not talking coins and things or diamond rings. Everybody wants some change, but don't nobody wanna do nothing till the pain they can't stomach. And they told me that I believed them, so I gave them to the everybody thought that I was tripping, saying that I'm be acting different.
Ain't no high like the most high. Ain't no high like the most high. Ain't no high like the most high. Ain't no high. Ain't no high like the most high.
All right, we're back after that epic conversation with me and David talking about balance, anxiety, and change. And joining the Most High Show in the virtual seat of service is Mike Govani. Yeah. He is an integrative practitioner. And on his website, he says he is an integrative, holistic approach to healing beyond recovery and address past trauma so that you can be free. This is where your journey begins. So, Mike, what's the day in the life like of an integrative practitioner?
Yeah, life today is beautiful. I'm out here in sunny Sedona. And really, when I say this, I really, really, truly mean it, that Today, I'm finally content in my skin suit. It took me a long time to get to this place. A big part of that was finding my life's purpose. I think we're all, let's say, to some degree, unsettled until we begin to find that purpose. And for me, finding that purpose and coming out to this land of Sedona, getting married to my now wife, is really a beautiful thing. So today I'm in a great spot, and I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So you're comfortable in the, what you call it, an earth suit?
Comfortable in my own skin. One of my quotes is, "It's your birthright to feel comfortable in your own skin."
Yeah, absolutely. I would concur. Yeah. So you say you finally got comfortable in your purpose. So let's talk about your purpose, and then we'll talk about why weren't you comfortable. All right. So let's talk about, what's your purpose? You found it. What is it?
Yeah. So for me, my purpose involves, you know, being of service to other people, to helping people heal what I've had to heal. I think life gives us some of our greatest challenges, so we have to face them and overcome them and heal them. And then that gives us the consciousness and the experience to help others. Even, you know, Albert Einstein says, the only source of knowledge is experience. So I like to say that I was blessed with some Mount Everest-like hurdles, and that prepared me to, you know, do the work I do today to support others.
Yeah. So the work you're doing today is work that you've done yourself.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I have a lot of great certifications and studied with naturopathic doctors and some of, you know, one of the most world recognized coaches and all that jazz. But really, none of that means anything compared to what I've had to do and navigate myself. Yeah. I think, you know, yeah, I think my most valuable asset is the inner work and my own personal journey.
Yeah, right. Your own suffering.
My own suffering.
Yeah. So let's backtrack a little bit to that. So we can just, what I want to do is just give the audience a little kind of idea of who they're talking about, who they're talking to, and then we're going to dive into some of these concepts and ideas a little bit, and different forms of therapy and stuff like that. So you talk about overcoming these hurdles, these mountains, right? Tell me what were those, and how did you overcome them?
So I like to say the four chapters of my book, when I write it, are gonna be childhood trauma, addiction, chronic illness, because the body holds the burden, and then spiritual awakening.
Wow.
So those four hurdles, starting off with trauma, is what I've had to heal. Do you want me to get into those four?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think trauma is at the root of addiction, meaning not necessarily what happens to us, but what happens within us as a result of what happens to us.
Yeah.
And for me, my first trauma began in utero when my mom discovered my dad's secret. My dad at that point was a religious figure. And before that, he was a Catholic priest. So if you have any idea where this story is going, you know, my father had allegations of pedophilia when he was a priest. And my mother discovered him when they had a huge congregation, and my dad derobed and became a born-again Christian preacher. And I was in my mom's womb, and I was swimming in a sea of cortisol because my mom was in a constant threat response. And I think that was my introduction to things as it was, and trauma in particular. And I think that set my nervous system up through epigenetics to express the illness that I was talking to you about in the third chapter of my story.
Yeah.
For autoimmunity, for cognitive, and also for addiction. I don't think addiction is solely based upon genetics 100%. I think genetics can play a part. But as we know, environment is what triggers those genes to express. And when I was born into this world, I was 8 pounds, 4 ounces. I don't know so much about my birth tremor exactly, but it was a rough road for me. And at about 3 years old, I was then separated from my mother. Oh. And my father had won custody of my sister and I. And you can only imagine what was going on through my mother's system as she lost custody to her her husband at the time, or ex-husband, and knew what was going on behind the scenes with him. So that's a little bit of that introduction to that. And as things developed, I didn't have a very good relationship with my dad. And I never wanted to be home. Home wasn't a safe place for me. And, you know, the big question out there is, you know, did my father sexually abuse me? I'm not sure to this day. I've had some psychedelic journeys that have shown some things, but that's still something to be uncovered. I can tell you that sexual abuse is part of my story in general, and also, you know, emotional neglect and the lack of nurturing. And that's what sets the stone for trauma, especially in a young, little nervous system as a child.
Yeah.
So most of us who have become addicted, our childhood plays a direct part in how we became addicted. This would be the link between the biography of your story and your biology of what happens in your body.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like what you said. You said that the trauma is not about what happened to you, but it's about what happens inside of you as a result of what happened to you, right?
That's right.
Where you can have like siblings who can grow up in the same dysfunctional environment, and one of them can become addicted and the other can go off to just be a college star and get a great college degree and go off to be a wonderful, well-rounded human. And you're like, well, what happens, and why did one, right? And trauma is something that happened within that one person. And there's you know, I like how you're talking about there's some biological, maybe even spiritual is a good word, something that resonates within a person as a result of something that happens to them at an early age. And they learn to take on either coping mechanisms or belief systems, or they start writing a narrative, and then these things get concrete and you begin to live life kind of based on that new reality. Are we on the same page?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's exactly my story. My sister put herself through college, became a police officer, and I developed a $500 a day opiate habit at the end.
Wow.
So it totally resonate with that. And in fact, you know, even coupled with the beliefs and so forth is the activation of trauma in one's nervous system.
Yeah.
And I think this is one message that I'm here to really relate to the recovery community, is that when you understand trauma, you will understand yourself and how you became this way in a much deeper level. Mm. So we can get into that as we may, but yeah, I'm very much on the same page, Christian.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so then you get in, as you're not feeling safe at home, you're venturing out. That's probably putting you in the crowd, and the social aspects of addiction and drugs and things. Is that kind of, you know, classic introduction into getting high?
Yeah, 11 years old, you know,
yeah.
Skating on the pond, smoking my first joint, hanging out with the older kids, you know, then Mickey's Ice 40 and putting that down, and you know how it goes.
Big mouth.
And, you know, you just keep going from there. So exactly. And, you know, not to stay too much in a drunkalogue, but I finally met my match when all of us found OxyContins. Mm. And I didn't know what OxyContins were. I just thought they were high powered Percocets, and which they are, but, you know, more similar to probably heroin. And then before you know it, I'm 16, 17 years old, strung out on $500 a day worth of opiates. So
wow.
It went from alcohol from pot to, you know, psychedelics in a way that wasn't in a healing context, let's just say. And then finally, I was strung out at about 17 years old on $500 a day with the opiates.
Wow. How are you paying for that habit?
Take one guess.
Selling.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm not proud of that. I can definitely share with you guys too. I am definitely an entrepreneur at heart. You know, it's and a lot of us are, and it's a blessing in such beautiful ways too. But yes, I'm not proud that I did sell those pills back in the day. But that's how I supported my own habit.
Yeah. So how long does that run last for you until you and does it take a couple attempts at recovery or?
Yeah. So I kind of have a little unique story, I guess. My run lasted about 2.5 years and I was 18 years old. I reached out to my mother, who at that point, she has a problem with alcohol. So she's been a self-admitted alcoholic for a long time. And I said, Ma, I can't stop doing these pills. Can you help me out? You know? And she said, yeah, I think you need to go to your doctor. So I'm 18 years old, sitting on the bench of my primary care, my pediatrician's office.
Oh boy.
So he says, all right, Mike, here you are, you know, gives me a full, you know, look over and whatnot. He says, okay, you're ready to go. And I said, we're ready to go where? And he says, you're ready to go to detox. And I said, I kind of looked around. I said, detox. I said, I'm not going to detox. So I share this compassionately, but at the time my ego wouldn't let me go to detox. You follow me?
Yeah.
So I went out on the street and I copped some methadone and I weaned myself off a $500 a day habit. And almost 19 years later, I've never touched an opiate.
Wow. Wow. All right. So you were kicking, using methadone. Now, methadone is pretty hard to kick as well, though, right?
I guess, but I didn't have a choice. I had only the wafers I had, which I've never seen in my life, even till this day. A friend gave them to me, break them in quarters, take one then, take one this time, take one this time. I had my whole pharmacy of things, you know, that I was using, little Xanax, yeah, little Klonopin. And once again, I'm not saying that this is the way to go for people. I'm just sharing my experience.
Yeah.
But I managed to play doctor with myself and get myself off. Could I ever do that again, Christian? Probably not. I think the grace of God was with me. And I think I know I was at a crossroads where I was going to die at the end. So I knew if I didn't stop doing these pills, I was going to die. And just to give you a little bit more context is that secret my father had, you know, was like holding up a tsunami. Okay.
Yeah.
Having your father be a pedophile is a tough one to swallow. Okay. But at the same time, I graduated high school, thank God. And I knew that news was going to come out and it finally did. And it came out when I was 30 days sober off OxyContins. Wow. And I said to myself, if I can stay sober during this time, then I can stay sober anytime.
Yeah.
And that was a big motivation for me was I knew I wasn't going to live. I knew I wasn't going to be able to carry on and go back to using those pills. And I had to move through the pain.
Yeah.
And that's why I was using painkillers.
Right. Yeah. So you stop using opiates. Are you still using other substances to maintain or?
Yeah. Good question. So yes, I put down the opiates and I thought I was good. So at that point, I was still smoking pot and I was still drinking alcohol. And at the end, 2 years after that, after I put opiates down, I reached out to my mother once again. I said, Mom, I was terribly depressed. Now, when I say depressed, I mean, I was having like suicidal, homicidal thinking and I was scared of my own thinking.
Yeah.
So I had reached out and my mom said, hey, why don't you check out a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? So I attended my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I loved the people. I loved what they were saying. I identified with how they felt. And I said, Ma, that was great, but I'm not an alcoholic. Mm. So I went out that night. And at this point, I was just drinking hard booze and straight from the bottle. And I was acting a fool, driving drunk. And I woke up that next morning with the same feelings of depression, impending doom, you know, not sure if I wanted to live. So I reached out to my mother again. I said, hey, I think I need to attend another one of those meetings. So I've been sober since my second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was November 2004. There's a little twist to the story, which this will be the first time I will be disclosing this, if it's okay with you. But since then, I have actually explored with cannabis on New Year's of this year.
Okay.
And part of my healing beyond recovery is, and once again, I don't want to give your listeners a mixed message, but I think, at least for me, I don't have a desire to escape my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that mind-altering substances have control over me anymore. In the context of, I explored with cannabis on New Year's this year and didn't enjoy it, didn't like it, didn't want to use it, and haven't used it. So where am I going with this? I follow along the lines a lot with Dr. Gabor Mate.
Okay.
He talks about...
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he's one of the world's leading in trauma and addiction.
Okay.
And he talks about when we heal trauma, the traumatic activation, and we have a shift in consciousness, then the exploration of mind-altering substances is no longer needed in the context in an addictive way.
Right.
And for me, I don't think drinking booze or doing opiates is a good thing.
Right.
But I don't think that addiction is a death sentence. Now, that's just for me in my way, and I'm more than happy to talk to you about that. But that's been my progression. So after the 2 years of OxyContins, I hit AA. I finally got totally sober. And then I got into the world of using etherogenic experiences, psychedelic experiences,
okay,
to promote more healing. And we can get into that later. But today, yeah. I don't drink booze. I don't use opiates. I don't do anything in an addictive fashion. And I am free.
Yeah. So you also mentioned, illness, physical illness.
Mm-hmm.
And when does that start coming up for you?
Yeah. So Christian, almost 10 years into recovery, I couldn't stop the running.
Mm-hmm.
In the little preamp of this podcast, you guys were talking about striving in the background.
Yeah.
Okay. I was a constant striver. Couldn't slow down. Couldn't stop. Had to stay busy, making money, doing this, chasing this, doing that. Right. In the gym. One big thing for me was I was in the gym. You see this a lot. It's very common with a lot of men. They get in there and they work out. So I couldn't stop, and I bought my first home. I was renovating it, and all of a sudden, boom, I got immense diarrhea with blood in it. So I go to the doctor, the GI doctor, and he says, yeah, you need to get a colonoscopy. And at this point it was bad. I was losing weight. I was having about 10 bowel movements a day with blood and a big sense of urgency. And I got a colonoscopy, and I came out of that, and he diagnosed me with universalis ulcerative colitis. Whoa. So my whole colon was full of ulcers.
Whoa.
Now, he didn't put his hand around me and say, hey, Michael, tell me how you became this way. Tell me how you're 25 and your whole colon was ulcerated.
Mm.
He never asked me that question. But do you think there's a correlation between what I lived through as a child and constantly in the fight or flight mode stuck on in my nervous system in me developing autoimmune ulcerative colitis? Of course.
Okay.
So where am I going with that? I was told, take a bunch of prednisone, take 6 of these, take 5 of those, and let's see what happens. And I did. And I got into remission. I traveled the world, 9 countries, grabbed a backpack from Chile, Mexico down to Santiago, Chile. I got a parasite in Guatemala. I came back and the UC was activated again. Now here I am even in worse shape. All that muscle I built up in the gym, I was withered away down to 140 pounds. I couldn't digest food. It was going right through me. So they put me on the big guns, an immunologic drug to say, whoa, 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 to calm my nervous system. Yeah. 12 months after being on that drug, it gave me autoimmune hepatitis. Okay. And I just hang with me for a sec. Let me share with you where this is going into the fourth chapter of spiritual awakening.
Okay.
So I'm 10 years sober. I'm sick as a dog, ulcerative colitis. I can't stop the running. But finally, the universe, the divine is like, okay, buddy, you need this is what you need. So I believe ulcerative colitis was a gift to me as much as the pain I was in. I think all of our suffering is a gift when we're ready to pay attention and listen to it.
Yeah.
So at this point, my liver's shot, and the doc tells me I'm facing two guys and one of the two doctors in the best hospital in Boston. They got their white coats on. One's the hepatologist and one's the GI dude. The GI doctor says, you may need to take your colon out, and was giving me business cards for surgeons to take my colon out. I would take the business cards each time and I would slam them. I'd put them in my trunk and slam the trunk. I wouldn't even look at them. The liver doctor said, hey, if you don't take care of this liver issue, you might need a liver transplant in 8 years. And I looked at these guys. I said, is this what you have for me? And they said, yeah. And I left mainstream medicine and I never stepped foot in that establishment to this day.
Wow.
And towards the end, because the liver processes what? Chemicals, right?
Yeah.
And I always had a sensitivity to smell. I could smell very well. But what happened is something turned on. And I developed what's called multiple chemical sensitivity. 10 years sober, I couldn't stand cologne, the smell of gasoline. I couldn't, it's deodorant. I couldn't stand any chemicals whatsoever. The sense of smell is the only smell that goes directly to the amygdala, your fight or flight mechanism in your brain. You follow me?
Okay, yeah.
So every time I smelled a chemical, I went into a deep, deep, deep state of anxiety. And I didn't know what to do. Mm. Now, at this point, I had to leave my job. I couldn't even work anymore. I was so sick. I had to get off that drug that was keeping me together for 12 months because it was ruining my liver. And I found myself in the woods meditating to calm my nervous system.
Yeah.
Because my nervous system was at threshold. And I was practicing now, once again, we're shifting a little bit. I started to practice Buddhist meditation and listen to teachings of the Buddha. And being the son of a born-again Christian, I knew that was probably, you know, blasphemy and not the right thing to do, but I was following this inner wisdom. And I had a profound spiritual awakening.
Yeah, as a result of one of these meditations.
As a result of calming my mind for months and at a time.
Okay. All right.
It was a buildup. It wasn't like, let me just meditate for 10 minutes, Christian.
Yeah, yeah.
I was literally thought I was going to die because of the symptoms I was having. And I leaned into the death and I let go and I evaporated and I dissolved and I became one with the universe. I was the bird migrating. I was the acorn that turned into a 90-foot oak, meaning there was no duality.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll share something with you. Is when I was going through these awakenings, these shifts, at one point I said, wow, I said, damn, Jesus doesn't have shit on this guy, Buddha. And I said, no, that's not right view.
That's more duality.
That's it. These are all teachings of the truth. These are all paths to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Paths are many. Truth is one. Therapies are many. Healing is one. And I got really curious about the message that my dad taught and who was Jesus. So anyways, it led me down to this, into shifting my whole consciousness from that spiritual awakening. So those are the chapters.
Yeah. So out of these spiritual awakenings, this continued meditation practice that you're doing, you were able to calm the nervous system. And so the symptoms of the issue with the colon and the liver, the symptoms went away. Have you ever had them checked, or are they healed? Or as far as you know, there's no symptoms. You're you're good.
Yeah, so it's definitely a little bit more in depth than that.
Yeah.
You know, if you want me to break it out to you and your audience, I don't know if you all know about a fecal microbial transplant, but part of my healing was repopulating my whole microbiome with what? With fecal matter from a healthy donor. So that's one modality. The other modality was I have to, my body's bearing the burden. My childhood is stuck in my colon. Uh-huh. I had to feel the emotion that was tied to that trauma and release the trauma from my body. And hence, when you can rest in those deep states of activation and let go, you can allow that traumatic activation to move through you and to actually open you to higher states of consciousness. So four doorways in the Buddhist and Tao tradition to experience spiritual awakening are death, meditation, tantric sex, and trauma. Mm. So I was reaching these altered states of consciousness. And even if we get into the topic of psychedelics, you know, my doorway through is through spiritual practice and meditation. So I went on doing, you know, I changed my diet. I had a, you know, high end supplements. I had to exercise. I had to detox. I had to do, you know, a fecal microbial transplant. I had to do all these different things. And when you introduced me as an integrative practitioner,
yeah,
I had to take an integrative approach to healing.
Yeah.
And that's why I call myself an integrative practitioner, because I integrate multiple modalities to help people experience multidimensional healing.
Yeah. So here, let me say, this is why I believe you. All right. And I'm saying that because I know some people listening might not believe you. Right. And this is far mm-hmm. out. And I told you I was going to tease some of this stuff out to talk about it. Right. But here's why I believe you. When I was about 7 years into recovery, I was depressed, suicidal, having a lot of major issues. And I went to go see an addictionologist. The addictionologist did a brain scan. She did a hormone panel on me. She did a bunch of blood work to see where I was vitamin deficient. And in it, she found all these deficiencies, vitamin deficiencies, hormone imbalance, a brain injury from when I was, you know, 9-10 years old. And she found all these things. And so we began to address the biology. Now, up until that point, my 7 years recovery, it was never like, I always kind of like, you know, I just got sober and was done, you know, and I kind of just kept moving. But I never got what, you know, in the 12 steps, they call the promises. I never got, or what you would say, free. I never got free. I was still weighed by life. And once I got the biology in line, then all of the everything else started coming into alignment. The spirituality started to awaken. The step work started to awaken. My connection to other humans started to awaken, because I had to get the biology, the body. The body wasn't healed. It was, and who knows why it didn't show up for 7 years, or what traumatic, because I've had a lot of trauma myself, right? And how much of that's all integrated. But that's how I know that, you know, these things, we look at them as separate, right? Spiritual and body as two separate things, but they're so interconnected, because it was almost like my body was not allowing me to fully integrate spiritually, in a sense. I had to heal the body to heal the spirit. That was my experience, you know? So that's why when you talk about kind of the inverse of that, right? Getting to the spirituality to reveal the pathway to heal the body, right? That these things are connected. And I think it's so important. I think there's also, let's jump to talk a little bit about trauma. All right. Cause there's a lot of people, trauma is like a buzz topic now, you know, mm-hmm. it's in the zeitgeist of the recovery world. Everyone's talking about trauma. Okay. And you know, a lot of people are like, it's all trauma. Trauma is the thing. Are you one who says trauma is the thing? If you do think it's the thing, why is it the thing? The main issue, the main problem, the main culprit, the issue with not just addiction, because I think addiction is probably an extreme response, but I think you could have trauma that could result in behavioral issues or mental health issues or, you know, so why is trauma so important? And do you think it is the central thing?
Yeah. So I do think it is the central thing. And I think it's very complex. And once again, much of it in the way trauma is stored in the body is not in the cortex, but in the subcortex, in the limbic system, in the unconscious that holds the trauma. Mm-hmm. So even Carl Jung says we don't become enlightened by imagining images of light, but by only making the darkness conscious. So the aspect of healing trauma is helping us make what's unconscious conscious, specifically the emotions and the activation that's tied to the story.
Okay.
And when we can uncouple the activation to the story, then integration can happen. You know, okay. Processing, resolving, integration happens.
Yeah.
Now,
is this what someone calls shadow work? Right? Like facing the darkness, facing the things?
Yeah. I mean, in my specific journey and training, mm-hmm. it would be considered more of a somatic experience.
Okay, what's somatic? What do you mean by somatic?
Somatic meaning body.
Okay.
Meaning the soma.
Okay.
And let's think of it in this context. When we take something from the external and put it inside of us, hence a powder, a potion, mm-hmm. whatever it may be, what are we trying to do? We're trying to change the way we see or feel in some particular way.
Right.
Now, as like Gabor says, the substance always does something for the addict.
Yeah.
Not necessarily bad. It's what they're trying to
accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Otherwise, and we're not going to get addicted unless it worked. Right.
It works for a time being. And then it's like the other edge of the sword comes and cuts you up.
Yeah.
So going back to trauma is the psyche has a real deep way of showing or not showing us what we're ready or not ready to see. Mm. And when things are unconscious, suppressed, and pushed down, they're still there. They're just coming out in behavioral patterns.
Yeah.
In sometimes perversions. I mean, all different types of things. But underneath that is driving is the trauma. Mm-hmm. So, and here's the thing is we have to be ready and we have to feel safe in order to do that type of work. So you said trauma is a buzzword. Unfortunately, it is. And there are so many people out there, even coaches that are saying, you know, trauma this, trauma that, and they don't really understand or not really equipped to working with trauma. Trauma is like doing surgery.
Mm. Yeah.
You follow me?
Yeah.
And if you don't take it, or if you don't, if you don't address the process and healing of trauma correctly, you can re-traumatize a human being.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, yes, I think trauma is the main buzzword because trauma is what creates the disconnection. And yeah. I think also disconnection is at the root of addiction.
Yeah.
We're disconnected from ourself.
Yeah.
And we're disconnected from other. Now, for many of us, our primary caregivers, the ones that we're supposed to love and nurture us the most, hurt us the most. So we come into this world, many of us, not all, with a tainted view of love and human beings, that they can't be trusted. They're unsafe.
Yeah. Yeah.
We develop hypervigilance. You follow me? So yes, I do think trauma is at the root and it's a very complex situation.
We lost a little, we got a little slower connection, but you're good there? Okay, cool. All right, we'll do a jump cut, or we won't. All right, so let's stay on topic for trauma. Like, one thing that I've noticed is, like, there are some people who have amazing transformational spiritual experiences, right? And I'm thinking of a couple people in mind who are like prisoners, long-term prisoners who have a spiritual awakening, right? Through the path of Jesus. Okay. And I've met and talked to some people who've had these spiritual awakenings, and they seem to kind of have been set free from they seem to get set free, right? I mean, and they seem to live with a freedom in life, and it's just one event, right? And here I am, you know, 11 years into recovery, still digging, trying to work shit out. I'm still a freaking mess, right? But I look at some of these people who are just seem to live life so simply from these things. So I guess, like, the question and the idea is, like, can spiritual awakening or spiritual collision do the work in the unpacking and the relieving of the traumatic experience so that the subconscious is no longer connected?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's my personal experience of embracing a spiritual practice in ancient wisdom tradition of Buddhism, not knowing what I'm doing, but just working on the basic principle of meditation, but also having the conditions arise where my mind and psyche are at a place of absolute the end of the road, and I decide to just lean in wholeheartedly and let this thing go in the context of not holding on, and a powerful transformation happens. Now, what happens there? I see I have a shift in perception. I see myself. I see what happened. I see others. I see the world in a complete different set of eyes.
Yeah.
You follow me? So I think, you know, a huge part of healing is helping the person engage in the shift of their own consciousness for them to see that what they went through, who they are, and, you know, the world in a new particular way. And I think that's where the healing, and even to bridge into psychedelics, that's what psychedelics can do for people, is to bring up what's in the unconscious and begin to see from a different perspective, once again, bypassing the default mode network, the network that creates the sense of self or I. You follow me?
Yep.
So when I had that profound awakening and became everything, I mean, I got to see what I wasn't.
Yeah.
And what I, you know, and therefore by seeing what I wasn't, I got to see what I was. Now, going before that, you know, let me just share what the day in the life of Mike Avoni then was. Totally insecure, driven by an unconscious part of me that had to prove my worth in the world all the time, chasing women, trying to satisfy those needs, driven by anxiety and or depression. You follow me?
Yeah.
And it's a very limited view. And I think the power of changing one's consciousness can most definitely affect both the psychological and biology.
Yeah.
Right? Because what happened through that experience, I'll tell you, Dr. Joe Dispenza, his work really teaches you that process at like a cellular biological level, that when we have these shifts and these openings and these transcendent experiences, we're actually shifting our gene expression in those moments. Mm. We're actually shifting our brainwave state to promote and turn on the genetics of healing. Mm. Rather than the ones of disease and being constantly stuck in that state of disease.
Yeah. 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 Well, as you were saying that, you know, it brought to mind in one of the 12-step literatures, it's like driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion, right? And it's like we're kind of in that state of you know, fear is we're kind of constantly always reacting and responding. And that's one of the things about like spiritual experiences and changing consciousness is, you know, you've heard the expression that culture eats ideology for lunch, right? So when somebody has a spiritual experience or some sort of profound revelation or understanding of themselves and the whole thing, but then they enter back into a culture and a world, right, that doesn't play by those same rules, that they seem to become fall victim back to that. How often do you see that, and how much of what you're dealing with in healing is combating that constant barrage from culture, right, that says you are somebody, you do need to earn, you do need to perform to be special, you know, all these things, right, that's constantly kind of contrary, and it's like, how often are you trying to recalibrate, and for you personally and in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question with a lot of layers to it. And once again, assisting and guiding the person to experience those new realizations for themselves in the moment is how those little epiphanies or awakenings happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are definitely conditioned by cultural, you know, religion, society, all of that definitely plays a part. And at the same time, I think finding a path of spirituality, whatever may work for you, so you can experience some deeper truths is the way.
Yeah, right.
One Trungpa Rinpoche, who's a Tibetan teacher, he says, the only way out is in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we talk about Jesus, for example, because I know you guys are all men of Christ, is, you know, Jesus said, be still and know that I am God.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about a different consciousness.
Yeah.
What do you think he was doing for 40 days and 40 nights, twiddling his thumb? He was meditating. He's ascending.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a teacher. So, I have a quote here by Yogananda, because I just want to share with y'all for the 12-step listeners. Now, I'm gonna spin something right now, which y'all might be like, I don't know about that, but
okay,
that's cool. Just hear it out.
Let's do it.
All right. So in 12-step, you know, a lot of the emphasis, or at least in the culture, may not be so much in Dr. Bob and Bill, but it's the powers outside of you.
Right.
The a higher power.
Yeah.
Well, what if there was a power within you that was of divine?
Yeah.
Right? Of divine wisdom that could lead you out of the shackles of addiction or whatever the situation may be. And my experience, and I'll just share this is only for me now. After that spiritual awakening, I never attended AA again. I haven't been to AA in, I don't know, 8 years, 9 years, whatever it may be. I say this not from ego, but two things. I found a different spiritual path that works for me. Beautiful. And I'm not holding the same consciousness of Alcoholics Anonymous at this point. And you might say, well, yeah, prayer and meditation is all in that. And you're right. I think Bill and Dr. Bob were right on when they wrote this program. But where I'm going with that is we have to awaken our own God consciousness.
Yeah.
Our own Christ consciousness, our own Buddha nature. So if you can recall, there's a quote in the big book that says like over 13, 14 times, thy will be done.
Yeah.
And Yogananda is a great spiritual teacher from India, and he held Christ at the highest on his altar, mm-hmm. Christ consciousness, teachings of Jesus. And his quote is, thy will be done does not involve enslavement of man's will. A man's will is identical with God's wisdom guided will, since all wisdom is his alone.
Mm.
What we have to do is wake up our own wisdom.
Right. Yeah. That's beautiful.
And that's the way out.
Yeah. Well, it's a high, it's a, you know, in the 12-step it's the higher power, right? You know, N.T. Wright talks about, you know, when you say, let's say I have a boss, I would say my boss is above me. But physically, he might have his office right next to mine. But I would say that my boss is above me, right? And it's the same thing in the wisdom of the Torah and in the New Testament. We say God above, right? God is higher, right? And we see that as this physical higher, right? Or outside. But it's more as authority, right? Higher. And so I think a big shift in my own spiritual work was beginning to pray to God within, right?
Yes, I love that.
Visualizing that, right? And even in the act of getting on my knees and on my elbows and praying, I realized I was creating a tabernacle as I prayed and praying to this God within. And there was a huge shift, because I think that is a huge problem. And I think that's also a misnomer about Christ and Christ's teachings, right? Is that the emphasis is there is no separation between God and man anymore. Mm-hmm. In the fundamentals of Christianity, no one's really preaching and teaching that, but that's really what it is. There's no separation. And if you can understand that, right? And I'm just agreeing with you with all my own sayings, okay? So like when God said, when in the scripture, it says God gives you the desires of your heart, right? And I think I'd always read that as what I want, God will give. But what I read it now as, God gives me the desires of my heart. The desires of my heart become God's desires as I continue on the path, right? And I think that's what I was getting at about kind of a daily recalibration for me and for anybody that I work with. And I think most spiritual practitioners, I don't think all spiritual practitioners are daily calibrating and either dedicated in the morning or dedicated moments and times throughout the day. But I think that because we're in a material world, right, and because we're existing in a culture, there's a constant recalibration that needs to happen to be reminded of this reality, right? The actual reality, the real thing that's actually happening, right? Which is what you tapped into in the woods, right? And what I know many of my brethren have tapped into in different moments. And it's like, you know, we dip yourself into that and you want to just swim in it all the time, you know, but we can't. We have to come back and pay the light man, right? And
put our boots on,
right? Right. So it all belongs, right? Everything belongs. And I think that I think there's two levels to what we're talking about. I think we're talking about the seekers are going to seek for these deeper truths, and then there's those who just want the healing and they want to live their life, right? How do you, when you're working with someone, delineate kind of, and is it that simple as the seeker and the one that just wants the healing?
Yes. So I don't advertise myself as a spiritual teacher. I mean, although I do integrate, let's say, practices that are very simple for the layman, for them to explore, and not particularly even to become more spiritual, quote unquote, or whatever it may be. But I'm using, you know, the ancient, you know, teaching practice of meditation or awareness to help people cultivate the observer. And when the observer becomes on board, then you are less triggered and activated by what happens in both your mind and body.
Mm. Yeah.
So when you can cultivate the observer and actually hold the activation and allow it to move through you once again, then healing can happen on the other side. Hence, on the other side of trauma can be great opening. So we're constantly, as things are in this universe, is expanding contraction. You know, when we're under trauma or the symptoms of trauma, we're seeing through a very small lens. And when we can develop the ability to just be with things a little bit more as they are in the present moment, our agency and we create more of room in this container for to be with our experience as it is. Yeah. And as simple terms, really, helping people come back to the present moment and to be with things as they are leads to more wisdom, more compassion, more healing.
Yeah. Amen. Man, that's great. I think we're running out of time, but the conversation has been great, which I knew was going to, because I have other things. We didn't even get into psychedelics, but I think that, you know,
we'll have to do another episode.
We'll have to do another episode, because I really want to dive into that and maybe even make a trip out to come see you. I love Arizona. I grew up on the West Coast. I spent a lot of time in the desert. The desert is it's a beautiful, alive, spiritual place. I love it. So, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. And I really appreciate you opening up so honestly about your own personal journey and what brought you to why you're found this purpose and why you're so passionate about helping and being of service to other people and helping them. So, man, thank you so much for being in the seat of service. Now, if someone wants to find out more information about you, how do they find you?
Yeah, so my work is Healing Beyond Recovery, and it's at mikegovoni.com, M-I-K-E-G-O-V-O-N-I. I'm on Instagram, but not that active at the moment, at Mike Gavoni. And Facebook as well. But yeah, you can find me online at mikegavoni.com.
All right. David, what'd you say? You had a question?
I said, you know, like, I like to hear what he would say to a newcomer, somebody coming in.
Yeah. You know, that's great. The words? So this is our final segment. This is the end. All right. The question to you is, the person who might be on the other end of this cosmic communication, and maybe they're thinking about, maybe they're suspicious that maybe there is some healing they need to address, right? They want to be free. What would you say to that person who's contemplating a new way of life?
Yeah, I think I would say, if you find yourself in a difficult situation or in pain right now, that everything is in flux and everything is in constant change. So try your best not to hang on to what's here in this moment, but just take the next step and put it forward, you know, the right step forward. And if they came into 12 step, I would say, I was going to say a couple of things that some old timers in Boston would say, take the cotton out of your mouth and put it in your ears. No, I'm just joking. I wouldn't say that. I would say, you know, trust the process and be kind to yourself. Yeah. And trust the process, be kind to yourself. And really, we have to try to find some good or some, I want to say humor, but, you know, try to find the good and a reason to stay around than to leave, because it's all happening for you and not to you.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well said, brother. Thank you so much for your time. Great to meet you and to wrap with you on this. This is the Most High Show. You can check out our documentaries, TV shows, all these episodes on the Most High Media app. Download it on Apple TV, Roku, iPhones, Androids, all that. We're here to help. We're here to bless you and be of service however we can. This has been a production of Most High Ministries. I am Reverend Christian Jansen. Thank you for listening to the Most High Show. Hey. We'll be right back.